What's up, guys? Welcome to the October 4th, 2017 edition of Kind of Funny Games Daily. I'm Tim Geddes, joined by Gerard, the completionist.
Hey, man. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. It's been way too long in the making. We've been trying to make this plan for you to come on the shows for like a year and a half or something, but here you are.
Twitter's been angry at us. They keep trying to get us to meet, and we finally did it.
Yeah, we finally did it. So thank you for joining us today. You're on this show. Later, you'll be on the Gamescast. I'm very excited about that.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Doing great. This is one of the first trips to San Francisco where I've had like nothing really planned except to like just meet friends and stuff. So it's been very interesting just to kind of explore the city.
Hell yeah, man. So for people at home that might not know who you are, give us the pitch.
Yeah, so I run a YouTube channel called That One Video Gamer for my show, The Completionist. And every week it's man versus game. I have 7 days to complete a game and do a big comprehensive video on my... kind of my findings and my struggles.
And it's not just completing game. It's 100%.
100%. And then, like, if it's a newer game, you got trophies, achievements, you know, glitches, hacks, whatever is in the game, I'll find it and talk about it.
Well, that is fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Kind of Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday, we get together right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames to talk about all the video game news and things that you need to know about going on in the industry. You can get it on Twitch, watch live, or you can watch the VOD later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. And then it's available on podcast services around the globe. Now it's time for what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. Today we have 3 news stories.
A baker's dozen.
Thank you. Thank you. The first one comes from IGN. A new Halo mixed reality experience has been revealed. Yesterday on the Halo Waypoint blog, 343 Industries revealed Halo Recruit, its first downloadable mixed reality experience since the company announced its interest in all things mixed reality in Halo. From October 17th, Windows mixed reality headset owners will get the chance to pick up those sweet, sweet Halo pistols and enter a shooting gallery featuring some of the series' iconic aliens as targets. You can also have a go by popping into a Microsoft store. Now, before you strap on your power armor and get too excited, the studio themselves has said that this, quote, isn't a game or even part of a game. Instead, it appears that this free 5-minute experience is the beginning of a more mixed reality experimentation with partner studio Endeavor One. The experience, which there's a short video you can watch on IGN, seems to be the standard mix of looking at cool models up close in a simple VR shooting gallery, ending with a call to arms from a certain giant space dude. The developer signs off by saying it's, quote, inspired and excited to do more, but we don't know when all that will be yet. So you're a big Halo guy?
Yes and no. The original Halos were my jam. I think Halo 3 was kind of the one where I was like, I think I'm good with Halo. And 4 and 5 were... 4 was felt a nice return back to basics, but I think 5 was just like... I had enough, yeah.
Yeah. What about Reach and ODST?
I really liked ODST. Reach was kind of...
Yeah. I really liked the story in Reach.
Yeah.
But then it was just like, yeah, I feel like that Reach was where they started messing with the gameplay a little too much for me. And then, yeah, when they kind of came back to it with 4, that was cool. But I liked that ODST was different.
I did, too. It felt like a different... It was almost like a secondary story in a different part of... Like at the same time as Halo was happening, right? So it feels very world-building.
Yeah.
As opposed to just changing up the gameplay entirely or kind of tweaking it a bit.
Absolutely. But this mixed reality stuff, does that interest you at all?
So I think... Right now, we're in an interesting phase with, like, VR and AR, right? With, you know, Oculus and HTC Vive and PSVR. I think that we're at a cool point where the games and the use of the tech is really starting to catch up with itself. And I like the fact that this is kind of the beginning to see if there is interest. I don't know if I'd personally be down to, like... The obvious question is, will this lead to a Halo-based VR game? And... I don't know. I don't know if it's something I would personally want.
Yeah.
But I think given how VR is becoming such the rage, I could definitely see it being a thing that people want to try out.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that it seems like we're still in a stage where every VR experience is just that. It's an experience. It's, yeah, let's look at some models and let's, you know, shoot some things while you're stationary. And it's cool and it's always fun. But when is that going to stop being... interesting and stop being the unique experience that it is?
Well, I think especially for shooters in first person, right, with VR, you don't really get the sense of running and gunning right away, right? You have to hold the controller, or in the case of the HTC Vive, you have the whole room to kind of move around in and play with, which is really fascinating. But how do you move forward in VR? Momentum. Yeah, how do you maintain the momentum in a VR game without feeling sick, without feeling weird, without not really knowing what, like, your spatial awareness? It becomes an issue, I think. And I think once these companies figure out how to get beyond that and how to adapt it, I think that's when we'll start to see more practical use of something like a Halo VR game.
And it, I mean, it's interesting too that, you know, Microsoft is kind of taking a different approach to VR and AR and all that stuff. Like, where PlayStation has the PSVR, Microsoft now has Oculus and stuff, but they're not really, or they don't have Oculus, do they? No,
they've got
Facebook. But they have their the HoloLens and that stuff.
The Microsoft, the HoloLens, and that is that the thing they showed at E3 2 years ago with that
Minecraft that came up
thing? Yeah, that was crazy.
And it's crazy. I remember being at E3 seeing it live, and it was insane. Where I was like, I've never seen something like this before. Like, the augmented reality stuff was neat with like 3DS, like when there was the cards that it came with or whatever. It's like, oh, this is cool. And then we've seen it a lot with iOS stuff and with Android phones and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But it's like, you never really see that turn into a great experience, with the exception, I would say, being probably Pokemon Go. And even that lost its luster after a couple days, you know?
Yeah, especially, nothing's not, I don't know about you, but I don't like the idea of putting my phone in as my VR device, you know?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Phones already have a hard time as it is maintaining their battery just by having a Bluetooth device or like a keyboard or whatever, but having to put your phone into a headset to use as your VR device just seems really not a very good idea.
Yeah,
Your phone's gonna die in 2 seconds.
I do think it's cool that they're pushing with a Halo experience, because it's important to have your experimental VR AR stuff be kind of have that AAA like hook.
Yeah.
Otherwise, like, people are just going to not think that the Microsoft and them are really committing to this vision. What I think is interesting, though, is them saying it isn't a game or even part of a game. They've really, like, 343 has went out of their way for the last year, I would say, to constantly reaffirm the community, like, hey, Halo 6 is not now. Like, we're not talking about it. Like, going into E3,
don't get too excited.
They're like, don't get excited. There will be something Halo. It's not Halo 6. It's not a new game. Like, just chill. And they weren't lying. Like, E3 came and went, and there wasn't a new Halo game at the show. And in addition to that, I just recently saw an article that broke down the release dates of every previous Halo game, in addition to the day that they were announced. And we were officially longer than it's ever been since a Halo game came out that the next one was announced.
Interesting.
And so we'll see when Halo 6 comes, but you got to expect the Xbox One X to come out, see how that does, and then E3 next year, get that, the actual next game, not just these little keeping Halo relevant experiences left and right. But
did Halo 5 do super well?
That's a hard question to answer, because it did super well. It did not do well compared to the previous Halos. Halo games.
Right.
And that's kind of it's a hard thing to talk about, because people would talk about, oh, it's a failure. It's like, well, it still sold a lot of copies. It pushed a lot of units. And I think people were really burned from the Master Chief Collection going into it. So
yeah, I could definitely see why.
Yeah. So I think that kind of had a lot to do with that. And it also was getting a little samey over time. But then a lot of people, like, the Halo 5 community is interesting, because it's divided, where there are people that love that game and are still addicted to playing the multiplayer. So then there's the other group that are like, this isn't right. But it's like, there is something there. And I do expect that Halo 6 will bring things back a bit. But yeah, Halo's just not what it used to be in terms of being this all-encompassing, like, media event.
You know?
So we'll see.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see what not only this VR experience does, but what it does for Halo fans. Like, will it make them want to think about an interest of a Halo game in VR? Or maybe it's a test for Halo 6 to have some VR function? No one really knows.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see.
Next story. PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds dev apologizes for server problems. In order to combat, this is also from IGN, in order to combat recent connection, login, and server crash issues caused by rapid growth of the player base, the PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds development team will be preparing servers, quote, far more in advance, according to a recent blog post on the developer's website. We anticipated about 1 million concurrent users in the beginning of our early access period. That's hilarious. 1 million. Let's see where they're at now. Since the end of June, our concurrent player base saw a rapid increase, so we started designing a new server architecture. However, the number of users increased faster than our development speed, which resulted in more connection and server issues recently. Since it has become increasingly difficult to manage servers during peak times, the team will prepare servers far more in advance so that they can handle a much larger number of concurrent players. The development team spoke specifically to the server crashes players in Asia have been facing, noting that they were due to an increased concurrent player count there, as well as the team's cloud service being unable to use more physical servers. To address this problem, we added more servers from another cloud service without sufficient testing. Some servers overloaded, which caused frequent crashes. The post explained, our development team is investigating the issue in order to prevent it from happening in the future. The team apologizes for any inconveniences players experienced due to these issues, assuring fans that our team will not be content with the status quo and will do our best to improve your experience.
Now, yesterday you said PUBG, you guys said on the show that PUBG, I think, had what, 13 to 16 million views or something like that?
Which is insane. Concurrent.
Yeah.
My guy.
So what, I guess my question to you, because I'm not a big PUBG guy.
Have you played it?
I have.
And you're not hooked?
It's just not hooked for me,
wow,
no.
That is insane. No.
Which is funny, because I did try the big controversial rival of it that came out with Fortnite Battle Royale. Was it Battle Royale? Mm-hmm.
And how'd you like that?
A lot of fun.
Really?
I think aesthetically, Fortnite's more my game anyways. But I don't know. I mean, do you play PUBG a lot?
Yeah. I love it. It's in my game of the year candidates for sure. Like, it's just such a great experience. And I love that the pick up and play nature of it, and just like being with your buddies, and every single match is fun. There's some story there. And I always enjoy video games that, like, the mechanics are great and it's fun to play, but it's more about the experience of every time you do it, where the stories come from, oh man, like I was in a car and then this other thing came over and blah, blah, blah. It's like when you can share that with your friends, like that's special. Like that's what video games are to me.
Yeah. So have you been playing since the beginning for PUBG?
No.
Okay. So have you noticed that the load times have gotten worse and worse as the years have gone on?
I don't play that much to notice things like that. Yeah. But at the end of the day, this goes back to something that we talk about a lot, transparency. Like, I think it's awesome that there are issues and the team is addressing them head on and putting this stuff out there. Not only are they apologizing, but they're like, here's how we're going to fix this. Here are the issues we're having. Here's what you might experience. Like, we're aware. And I think that it goes such a long way for the goodwill of the community to be like, oh, okay, cool. They're listening. They care. They know that there's problems, and they're being honest about the fact that it's expanding faster than they thought it was. They need to figure out the problems, and that they will. And then it holds them accountable to have to actually figure it out.
Yeah, they're being proactive about their community and understanding what's going on. Hey, we are experiencing problems, but we're working to fix them, and they're adamant about fixing them. And I think that this is way more important than just not saying anything at all.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Now, the final news story of the day. This one's a little interesting. It's not so much a news story as much as something I want to talk about. Pokemon the movie I Choose You full theatrical trailer came out today. Next month, Pokemon is returning to select U.S. cinemas for 2 days only with the nostalgia-laden I Choose You movie. As the 20th film. The 20th film. That's nuts. Since Ash first met Mewtwo in 1998, the production studio at Toho has decided to call back to the very first season of the anime. Now, it's obvious the new movie has significantly changed some parts of the plot, but it's worth noting the movie isn't seen as a retcon, but more of a parallel world where events unfold differently after Ash takes Ho-Oh's rainbow wing. Pokemon the Movie I Choose You will be heading to certain U.S. cinemas on November 5th and 6th, and you have to go to the Fathom Events page to find theaters that are in your location to watch it. Did you see this trailer?
I did not, no. I did watch at least 4 or 5 of those first films when I was younger. The very first one, I went to the premiere of it because my mom was responsible for helping one of the artists on the soundtrack get on the album for the OST for the movie.
What?
Yeah, who? Pokemon the movie. Ashley Ballard, I think the song was It Was You. I think it's definitely on the soundtrack, but my mom was working with her manager to get her
that
track.
Soundtrack.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm very familiar with the Pokemon movies.
The first movie. Yeah,
first movies, but I think I stopped watching Pokemon
long ago.
And
yeah.
I keep seeing the, like, I think they recently, 2 years ago, redid I know that they the art design they've redone Ash and
yeah,
Misty and
Brock. It looks a little older and yeah. Well, I mean, Misty and Brock aren't even in it anymore. Like they've been long gone.
What have I been seeing lately? Isn't there there's another show or well, another
they come
segment?
There's they come back every once in a while and yeah. I haven't watched in a bazillion years. But what's cool about this is so about 3 years ago there was a 4-episode series called Pokemon Origins.
Yeah.
That was an anime based on the game. So it actually went through the story, and it was Red and Blue, not Ash and Gary, and yeah. It went through like the plot and events of the actual video game, and that was super awesome. This seems to be more of like a 20th anniversary or 20th movie celebration, and going back, it's kind of retelling Ash's story from the anime, so it's like season one, but like different. Like remember at the end of the first episode when he looks up and sees Ho-Oh flying.
Yeah, he sees
and they
flying
never
by.
Really go back to that.
Yeah.
This movie seems to be about that. Like, what if he eventually got to that? And watch the trailer. If you grew up watching Pokemon at all, watch this trailer because like it hit me so hard where there's so many moments like him letting go of Butterfree or the Charmander being like his tail going out and like how sad that was and Pikachu said like all these moments where I'm like, man, they're actually treating this with a lot of love and care. So I'm excited. I'm going to go to the movie. Like I want to see it in
theaters.
Yeah,
I'll definitely take a look at it, especially because Fathom events happen like those types of showings are all over Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's like the place to have most of those Fathom event showings.
Yeah, so. The one thing I don't like, though, is that Brock and Misty aren't even in this. Like, there's two other people. And I'm like, if you're going to retcon, or not retcon, but like have a parallel universe of the original story, like, why not keep the original characters?
Well, I think it just depends on who's directing it, right? Who's making it? Is it the same company? Is it the same voice actors in the same direction? Are they trying to not be the anime? Are they trying not to be the video game? I think there's just so many.
Yeah.
Pokemon is such a large brand and a large company, especially for something like, you know, anime, manga, comic books, video games. There's so many things that they can choose to do with it. So I'm with you. I'm kind of curious to see who these sidekicks are. And
yeah.
And yeah, I obviously I don't know enough. I'll have to look at the trailer.
Yeah.
But
anyway, just check it out. That's a fun thing for me.
Yeah.
So that's it for the news. I skipped the housekeeping. I want to go back to that for a second. Not too much. Party mode is now available on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. We play a game called Shit on Your Friends, which is very fun, and it is by our friends over at Filthy Casual. So check that out. It's very cool. And as you can see here, this is the Kind of Funny Games Daily t-shirt. It's not yet available, but this is just a little teaser into your life. I like it.
Yeah.
It's hot. And I blend into the background.
Definitely is reminiscent of your guys' set, which is cool. Yeah.
Very cool. All right, now it's time for the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform is listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. See, this is Greg Miller's show.
Yeah.
So, like, he has all these, like, Greg Millerisms, and I'm just like, I'm going to try my best.
Sure.
So we'll figure it out. But games out today, Gerard. N++ on the Xbox One. In Versus Deluxe on the Xbox One, and the Star Wars Battlefront 2 beta early access for pre-orders is available today and tomorrow. So I'm sure a lot of people out there are going to be doing that. Tweet at me. Let me know how your experiences are. We're interested in what's talking about on the other shows.
My Twitter feed's been filled with
people playing.
Yeah. So
are you excited for Battlefront?
I am. I really liked the first one, but I think the sentiments and changes for Battlefront 2 are kind of what I was hoping for. So I'm definitely going to be checking it out for sure.
Yeah. I'm so excited for it, man. Like my thing is the first one was a little bare in terms of content. It didn't bother me that much because what I enjoyed about the game was how authentically Star Wars it was.
Yes.
The look, playing it, felt
the tone of it
right. Felt
very Star Wars. Yeah.
Yeah. But the biggest issue I had was no single player. Like I'm a single player focused guy. And now that 2 has that and it's being written by Mitchie D and Walt Williams, who we had on the show recently, like I am so excited because this might be a classic Star Wars game. You know,
yeah.
I feel like it's been a long time since we've had a really quality Star Wars story in a video game. Like even like the Force Unleashed games, like I enjoyed those so much. Like they're fun and a little fan fiction-y in a lot of ways.
Oh, but I liked them a lot too.
Oh yeah.
The second one, obviously not so much, but I thought the first one just didn't need to be a movie, but it definitely had the right essence of here's what happened between 3 and 4 enough where I was like, oh, that's why the logo's like this. That's why, like, that's why this character's here and there. So, I'm with you. I think The Force Unleashed was the last one narratively that really hit home for me.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see what this single player is all about.
Did you play the Battlefront, like the original Battlefront games on the PS2?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The one for the Battlefront 2 for the PS2, I like nonstop.
I saw someone let me know on kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. But I saw recently that they brought the servers back for the PS2.
Really?
Or maybe it might not be PS2, but for Battlefront 2. It must be on PC. But the original Battlefront 2. And so people have been playing it online.
I was going to say, I don't think anyone even has
a PS2 with the network adapter.
at least the fat PS2.
Oh my God, man. It's so, I remember the day I bought the network adapter the day it came out because I was so excited about the idea of playing console games online.
Yeah.
I wasn't a PC gamer growing up, so I never really had that experience. And I didn't have a Dreamcast, so I missed out on that because that was the first mainstream use of playing over the internet with a console, because the Super Nintendo had some things and whatever, but no one really did that.
At least in the States.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But then I bought the network adapter, and the sole reason was to play Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 online. And the network functionality, that was so limited. But like, there was just something about skating and then seeing my high score go up against someone else. And now that's just leaderboards. That's just a normal thing. But the novelty was so awesome. And it was like, oh, it's totally worth the $40 I bought. And also the idea of buying a component to add to my console felt badass, you know.
Yo, I always wanted the N64 DD drive. Yeah, that just seemed so. All those consoles felt like you looked in the bottom and you were like, oh man, this is gonna.
There's a bunch of holes all over.
Yeah,
this
what
thing.
Is this for? What's this gonna do next?
Yeah, and it's funny because I mean Nintendo has had that stuff since NES. Like there's like weird things you can open up and like nothing ever really came of that.
It's just a little port for something. Yeah.
But I remember with the GameCube, like they did eventually add the network stuff, but it was like looking at the bottom of the GameCube, there's like four different like compartments you can open up. And like even the N64 controller had the like the Rumble Pack and like what like the Pokemon Stadium Game Boy.
The Game Boy Card Pack, expansion pack, so you can play the.
And then in addition to that, the N64 had the expansion pack on the system. Anyway, the PS2 network adapter, it came with a demo disc to try out a bunch of games that you could play online. And one of them was Frequency, which is the prequel to Amplitude.
Yeah.
And that demo disc changed my life.
Yeah.
I played that thing so much, and now that's one of my favorite franchises of all time. So. A lot of fond memories.
For me, it's Final Fantasy IX for the PS2. It was Final Fantasy IX? No, not 9, 11. 11.
Oh, yeah, well, that was the major AAA online experience.
Yeah.
I never played 11, but did you have a good time with it?
It was my first MMO experience ever because I wasn't an MMO guy. And admittedly, I did not like it on the console.
Mm.
But playing the PC version was like night and day for me.
Yeah.
But again, going back to like you had the hard drive that went in the back of the PS2 and then the adapter on the back of that.
I never had the hard drive. I only had the network adapter.
Yeah.
But yeah, you needed the hard drive for 11, right?
It seemed kind of intimidating at first to put it in if you like knew nothing about PC. But
well, that's the funny thing is like, I mean, back then I had never built a PC. And so yeah, it felt like, oh shit, like what am I doing?
Am I going to break this?
Yeah.
Did I screw it in right?
Do you play Final Fantasy 14?
I do. Why? I played it all the way up until the newest expansion, and then I just didn't have time to get into it. But all my friends are playing it. I'm in like a YouTube group and... I'm definitely way far behind in terms of the new expansion pack, but it's a lot of fun. As someone who doesn't really like MMOs, I had a blast with 14.
That is awesome.
Sorry about that side tangent. We were focusing on Battlefront 2 beta.
That's great. Sorry. So speaking of Battlefront 2 beta, got a little fun surprise for you guys. I'm gonna throw this out right now. We got two codes. We're gonna give them away. I'm gonna read it out. Whoever gets it first gets it. The first one on PlayStation 4 is HDLA-DFN4-838E. The second one, also on PlayStation 4, JGRC-TPNR-ALTG. Good luck and Godspeed.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Shout out to our boys over at EA for hooking us up with that. And now some new dates. Horizon Zero Dawn Complete Edition is launching December 5th. For $49.99 MSRP. Includes the Frozen Wilds and all digital deluxe content. A lot of people are upset about this on the internet. Surprise, surprise, people are mad about things. But they're mad that it's like, oh, the complete edition, earlier this year I paid $60. Like, why would you release this? Like, why not wait till next year? It's like, guys, calm down, man. Like, $50 for one of the games of the year. Like, just appreciate it.
But this is, in fact, the last... DLC. I mean, there's only one DLC.
Well, I mean,
pack,
if they're calling it complete edition,
I imagine
then
done. Yeah. So that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I mean, the game's already done. I mean, I guess at that point, the debate is: are you waiting it so it's cheaper for everyone else because you just want to feel good that you spend $60, or do you just, like, if you haven't played the game, don't you want to spend $50 to have the whole experience right away?
Either way, I highly recommend buying this game if you haven't already, and $50 for it plus the DLC. Come on, like, that is it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, yeah.
Next up, developer Atui has announced the Mutant Muds Collection for the Nintendo Switch, a three-game compilation that brings the beloved platformers plus a new game in the series to Nintendo's latest console, is set for a Q4 2017 release. And finally, Hand of Fate 2 is coming on November 7th on Xbox, PS4, and PC. Now it is time for Reader Mail. It's brought to you by DraftKings. Football season has begun, but it's not too late to get closer to the game you love with DraftKings 1 Week Fantasy Football. This Sunday, DraftKings is hosting a $100,000 contest that is totally free to enter. With DraftKings, there are many ways to play. Choose between public contests with big cash prizes or private contests where you can compete against a group of your friends. DraftKings also has beginner and casual contests where you'll play against people of similar skill level. I recommend doing that. And you'll never burn up the waiver wire trying to replace injured players because you get to pick a new team every week. That's the beauty of 1 week fantasy at DraftKings. So get to DraftKings.com now and use promo code KINDAFUNNY to play in a DraftKings free contest with $100,000 in total prizes this Sunday. That's promo code KINDAFUNNY to compete for your share. The contest is totally free to enter. Why wouldn't you try? DraftKings, the game inside the game. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. First reader mail comes from Simon Tucker. A few news outlets have been talking about a new Twitter trend started by Michael Barclay of Naughty Dog called hashtag Blocktober. Have you seen this?
No.
It's where game devs show in-development wireframe looks of past titles. It's a really neat movement, and there's been some wonderful highlights, notably out of Naughty Dog, considering it started there, particularly behind-the-scenes looks at Uncharted The Lost Legacy and Uncharted 4. I highly recommend searching the hashtag. It's such a fun look at the things we all enjoy. Anyways, in honor of this, I was wondering, are there any behind-the-scenes things you've been able to see with games that you found really interesting? It might not be as interesting, but I always love when I'm playing a game and I fall through the world and I'm able to look up and see the game from a totally different perspective. So yeah, definitely check out hashtag Blocktober. It's very cool. I saw some where it's like Nathan Drake on a mountain, but it's like there's no texture on the mountain at all. And it's just like shapes and colors and stuff. And it's like, whoa, this is unreal.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of, I'm really good friends with Yacht Club Games, the guys behind Shovel Knight. And so I've seen a lot of early sprite work. I've seen a lot of world bending and just kind of the engine of how they built it. And obviously it's a little bit different because it's not a 3D polygonal game, so
yeah,
like, but it kind of applies, right? Because you are seeing the behind the scenes aspect of it. But yeah, I've seen a lot of the 2D pixel kind of love that went into Shovel Knight and how they've gone on with that, and that was really fascinating to see, especially because you kind of think of these experiences as, oh, you know, a level is a few minutes long or an hour or whatever it is, and then you look at the developers working on it and they've put in hundreds of hours and just and just what this character block is going to do or what this enemy's purpose is. It's so fascinating because I was reading an article the other day that was scrutinizing it was someone on Twitter, I think it was like a game dev, who was talking about how developers are afraid to talk about their experiences making games because they're afraid of being attacked, and how it's so much easier to just say, well, fix the multiplayer or fix this and that, and we really as the consumers don't have any idea what goes into making a game. And I'll never pretend that I do.
Yeah.
But I think just like a big old hug from me to every game dev out there, because the amount of hours that has to go into creating something that you care about that passionately is just tremendous.
Yeah, and that's definitely, check out the hashtag and, you know, show some love to all the devs that are like kind of giving us that little glimpse into the behind the scenes action there. But speaking of Shovel Knight, I remember back when Colin was here, he went down and talked to them and stuff, and he came back and he had these like documents that were level designs like drawn out and like with notes on like things they need to change. And it's just so cool that what we end up playing started as scribbles on a notepad, you know. Yeah. And it's just like kind of on ground. The fuck was that?
sorry about that. It's a pull-up bar.
Oh, pull-up bar.
Andy likes pull-up bar out.
Yeah.
Because, you know. What the fuck?
Fucking Nick's an old ass man. Anyways, yeah. So the Shovel Knight thing was cool, but something that I thought was really awesome is I got to go to Nintendo, not headquarters, but they're like building in Redwood City.
Yeah.
And for Pokemon X and Y, it must have been. And I got to meet the creators of Pokemon, which is super awesome. And they the room they were in was just covered in doodles of character designs, of Pokemon designs. And they're talking about like the original stuff. And it's like you see just images of like Rhyhorn, which was the first Pokemon they ever designed.
Yeah.
But then you see just variations where it's like, oh, it's different. Like it didn't end up being that way.
Yeah.
Or like seeing Squirtle and like his design wasn't right. It was a different color and things like that. I'm like, wow, like it's just so cool to know that there's so much legacy that goes into every little decision of a video game.
I think it also shows too how human we all are, right? Like, can you imagine being the person that designed like Pikachu or Charmander and just constantly going, it's not right. I don't know if it's good. Fuck it. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah.
Let's make it red. Like.
And then you get to a point where the Pokemon are just keychains and garbage crayons and stuff like that. And it's just like, all right.
Keychains, swords, yeah. Lanterns.
Ridiculous. CP says, this year has been huge for PlayStation. Crash, Neo, Nier, Horizon. With all these titles comes iconic main characters, which leads me to my question. At what point can we expect a PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale 2? Who else would you pitch to be in the game? The first game was wonderful, but flawed. It'd be great to see Sony return to the mascot brawler. You play Battle Royale at all?
I loved Battle Royale.
Really?
I'm one of the people out there that really likes it.
Oh, my God. I put a lot of time into that game because, in theory, I am all about it. I love Legacy. I love PlayStation. I love Smash Brothers. So yeah. It's like, to me, I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. My problem was, and I've said this many times, it copied Smash Brothers, except it didn't copy Smash Brothers. It should have been 100% clone and it would have been great. But instead, I hated the kill system. Like having to use the supers, that being the only way to knock people out.
I can see that. But see, to me, if I loved the supers, the only thing I didn't love about the supers was level 3 supers. I think level 3 supers was bullshit because you had no choice but to accept death. You know, get to level 3, super, everyone's dead no matter what. Or depending on the character, yeah. Right? But to me, if you got killed by a super, it's like that moment of just like you dodged just at the late time.
Yeah.
Like there's just the essence of like your skill is able to be capped at the person you're fighting. So if you're fighting someone with Kratos, and Kratos is level 1 super, it's, you know, the big mm-hmm. Zeus weapon, right? He kind of flings it across the screen. If you dodge that and then you counter with yours, you're like, oh,
yeah.
Like, it's like fire. You feel so stoked that you did that.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, level 2 and level 3 supers are a lot more bombastic than that. You don't have that same opportunity. So I could definitely see that. I think the biggest pain to come out of Battle Royale or All-Stars, PlayStation Battle Royale, is options.
Mm.
We did not have enough options for how we wanted to play the game, for how we wanted to experience the game. I think that's kind of where we saw the biggest growing pain for that franchise, because it could have been huge. It felt like it had a lot of love into it. That's the thing, is that it felt...
The team cared, for sure,
oh, they absolutely
but I think
cared.
A big problem was also the roster, where PlayStation has 20 years of characters, but because of licensing issues and all the problems, like for example, Crash not being that game, it's just
Crash and Spyro both not being that game.
It's ridiculous. And it's like, but it makes sense because of Activision, whatever. But now we look at it and it's like they
Crash is back now.
We can make this happen. Like let's figure it out. But I think the time for that game has come and gone. And I've said this before, but I imagine if they do another kind of crossover thing, it'll be a cart racer instead of
a racer or it'll be more of a 2D fighter, like a Tekken almost, where
Love that.
Yeah, I think having a, not necessarily an original engine, but just kind of, you know, like I really like the fact that Kratos was in Mortal Kombat for the PS3. That was like a fun thing, right? Mm-hmm. Fun little Easter egg. And, you know, we see it with MKX and now with Injustice 2, where it's like, oh, Sub-Zero's in the game. That's a really, fun thing. I think if they can figure that out, that'd be interesting to see. But I don't know. I really liked All-Stars.
Yeah. I mean, I liked it too. I wanted so much more from it.
Yeah.
But who knows? My dog Nick 96 says, hi Tim and Gerard. This generation of consoles has absolutely, for me at least, been a digital platform. I own over 300 digital games in my PlayStation 4 library. Woo! Both Microsoft and Sony have made moves to make iterative consoles like the PlayStation 4 Pro and Xbox One X. Say we get a PlayStation 5 or Xbox 2. Do you think they'll be compatible with our current games, or will they be locked to the consoles they were released on? Thank you all for everything you do. Tim, I'm loving the new Gamescast format. Andy, you've been killing it with Party Mode. And Gerard, I've been plowing through your completionist videos and have to give you mad props. You're all great inspirations to me. Oh, thank you.
Thank you, man.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
The digital thing is interesting. I don't know how they're going to handle it. And I think a problem we're going to face is it's a little too late to start thinking about it now. We saw it last generation with, you know, digital games kind of really making their first mark. Like on the original Xbox, there was some downloadable games, but it wasn't until the 360 and PS3 era that digital games really became a thing. Being able to buy AAA games and download them without going to the store was like really coming to the forefront. And now that's just normal.
Yeah.
But the fact that there's still not PlayStation 1 classics on PS4, the fact that you could buy all these games on PSN, on PS3, but it's not compatible across all that. To me, it's one of two things. It's either them realizing, oh, we can sell these games again and make more money, the Nintendo Virtual Console model, or it's them being like, oh, shit, like they're just incompatible to have that system work over here. So I'm concerned that there isn't the forethought to look at the next console and be like, oh, shit, like these games are going to be compatible and we'll be able to push it over. But then you see things like the backwards compatibility that Microsoft added after the fact of the Xbox coming out. And that makes me think maybe it is simpler than I'm giving it credit for.
Well, I think it's fascinating because Nintendo, Microsoft, and Sony are all these, they're companies about legacy. Look how long we've been in the space. Look at the games we're making, the franchises we're building, new and old. We're bringing back this game, we're bringing back that character, remastering this one. They're really about, at least this year, it really feels like everyone's trying to get everyone to remember why they loved gaming when they were young. And I think in order to go forward, these console markets, these console makers are trying to instill a future. They're trying to say, we need more new gamers playing the PS4, the Xbox One, the Nintendo Switch, because we want to ensure that when we start releasing games that they then kind of legacy-wise end up getting passed down to their kids and their kids and their kids and
get them hooked
and get them hooked and keep them going and keep them in the family of their console. But I think what was fascinating is that when the Xbox One and the PS4 were announced, there was this essence of like, so can my PS4 play PS3 games? And they were like, why would you want that? Why? They're two different devices. And so I think that mentality was kind of okay, right? Like, oh, I still have my PS3, so obviously I'm still going to play my PS3 games on my PS3. But I think the convenience of having your entire PS3 library available on the PS4 is exactly what everyone would want. And the fact that Microsoft is now kind of retroactively going back on that and saying, yes, I think they announced this year that they were going to bring back classic Xbox games to
the original Xbox for backwards compatibility.
Classic original.
It's hard to say.
It's weird with Microsoft.
The Xbox One.
The Xbox O original? Yeah. Classic?
who knows?
But I think that, to me, it's very important that they think ahead of bringing everything over. I think that it's a travesty that they haven't thought about that. If you're a developer and you made a game on the PS4 and then the PS5 comes out tomorrow, you're like, oh, well, now I have to redevelop the whole game onto the PS5.
Again, we're getting caught in that thing of just ports constantly and like Last of Us and then Last of Us Definitive and Tomb Raider and all that.
I'm the kind of guy that I would pay $20 to bring my game library with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I pay $20 and suddenly I can play the same copy that I have, my same game save, just up-res into the way that the console can ingest it, the way that they want it to, I'd be down for that. But I think to pay $60 again for a definitive edition or, you know, new multiplayer, that's all fine and dandy, but I can feel the fatigue.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't want to own... Like, you know, I love Mario, but, you know, owning
how many times are you gonna own
Super Mario World is on the SNES Classic. It's on the
countless systems. Game Boy Advance, the Super Nintendo, Wii U.
It's like
3DS.
I get it, but those people who own those games across all the platforms are loyalists.
Yeah.
So reward them.
Absolutely.
Let them take their legacy with them to ensure that in the future, oh, I'm gonna buy this because it'll work with everything I have.
Yeah.
And I think there's just been a subtle disconnect in the past 2 years with these companies. They just don't want to do that.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be, and it already is, a big issue with the smaller downloadable games that don't even have a physical edition because they get trapped on these systems. There's a bunch of games from last gen on PS3 and 360 that were downloadable that you just can't play anymore.
Yeah.
And like games like get taken off all the time. Like
Scott Pilgrim vs. the World.
Unless you have that, you ain't playing it.
Nope, it's gone.
And the Turtles in Time remake.
The Ubisoft remake.
Yeah, it's like those games are just gone. And like that's the sad thing. But hopefully they figure it out for the future.
Yeah. Future proof your stuff, please.
Chase Tincher says, long time listener, first time caller, yada, yada, yada. Anyway, South Park, The Fractured But Whole is coming out very soon, but it seems like there's not much of a marketing campaign around it as of yet. Are you worried at all that the game won't be good? Normally, when there's silence around a big game this close to launch, it spells trouble. Curious about your thoughts. Love the show. Keep doing what you're doing, and so on. Have you played South Park, the first one?
Yeah, I'm doing a video on it next week.
Oh, awesome.
To the day that the new one comes out. But I don't necessarily agree with our questioner, if you will. Chase. But I do understand that there is something weird when a company isn't talking about their game, especially when it's so close to launch.
Yeah.
I think when I pre-ordered Fractured But Whole on the PS4 and they gave you Stick of Truth on PS4, and it was like a couple of weeks out before the release of Fractured But Whole, and this game comes out in 2 weeks. We've heard nothing about it.
And then it got pushed.
It got pushed the week before. Like, it's kind of weird.
It's interesting. That was one of those games, we've talked about this before, where that delay, like, we knew about it. Like, yeah. Just, like, from people in the industry, like, everyone was like, this game is going to get pushed.
Yeah.
And so they knew. And I think that it was just, like, for whatever reason, they had to hold that information until they were ready to announce the actual delay. But I played it at E3, and it's fantastic. Like, this game is great. The team working on it are fantastic. They're great people. The writers are so funny. And I'm not worried about it. I think it's gonna be good. And in terms of the marketing, I've seen ads places. I know IGN was taken over by the South Park stuff recently. I think you might not be hearing much about it because there's so many games out right now. There's so many releases, so many big amazing titles coming out.
I feel like by the time we're done with this cast, there's going to be another game that just released to the stores.
That is blowing people's minds. I mean, it's so interesting where Ubisoft even, like, you look at their portfolio and the amount of games that they've released this year, their sales records are just like through the roof, where they're, For Honor, Ghost Recon Wildlands, Mario plus Rabbids. Like, these are games that, like, you'd be like, oh, if you would ask me how well are they going to sell, I'd be like, For Honor, I'd be like, probably not too well. I was fucking wrong.
Yeah.
Ghost Recon Wildlands, I'm like, oh, it'll probably be, you know, in the top 10 on the charts that month. It's been in the top 10 since it's launched.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy. They're on a roll. And I think that they have a special sauce right now with what they're doing. And it'll be interesting with South Park, because if I remember correctly, this is the first game being made entirely in the San Francisco branch of Ubisoft. So it is a new team. So we'll see how it all shakes out. But from everything I've experienced, I think it's better than the first one so far. I think the gameplay is great. The battle system is fun and it makes sense. It has a almost Fire Emblem-esque style to it, with the grid system moving around, and it's rewarding and it's fun and it's authentically South Park. Like, it's funny as hell. So,
well, you got me excited, because I definitely was ready to play it, but I, like our viewer, I hadn't heard much about it.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely, I mean, I was already gonna play it, but now I'm even more excited. I didn't even realize that it had a grid system to it.
Oh, yeah. No,
that's cool.
It's really cool. And another thing about not hearing too much now, I think it's an unfortunate result of that game being delayed, because we did hear a lot about it before, and like, we've now seen it multiple E3s, and it kind of gets to that fatigue point where it's like, all right, well, we don't want to blow our load and show too much because we've already shown a lot, so they can keep putting out the same thing over and over, but then people are not going to be, it's not going to resonate right with people when they play through the game. So we'll see.
It's been a crazy year for games, man. There's so many new games coming out all the time. It's hard to keep track of all of it.
Yeah, and man, there's been some good games.
Yeah.
This might be the best year in video game history, and we'll see. We got a couple months left.
I'm kind of leaning towards that with you, especially with Odyssey coming out in a couple of weeks.
Odyssey is so good. I cannot wait. Dan says, well, it's official. The Xbox controller is the best controller of all time. I know for some reason Tim can't seem to wrap his head around this amazing controller, but news has just released stating now that the U.S. Navy will be using the controller inside their subs as a way to use their Periscope. Thank you, as always, for the great content you deliver. Dan from Edmonton. Thank you, Dan. That's pretty interesting. And I will say, we're at a point where all three consoles have great controllers.
Yeah.
Like, for the first time ever across the board, like, you know, the last gen, the DualShock 3 was an issue.
Right? Yeah.
Like, especially when it was the six axis and it was way too light. And then they added the rumble and it's like, oh, the triggers just aren't good.
No, it's heavy.
Yeah, yeah, and whatever. But it's like DualShock 4, fantastic. The Xbox One controller, fantastic. The Pro controller
for the Switch, fantastic. Is awesome. Yeah.
It's just, for me, I don't play too many Xbox games, so I just don't really like the buttons.
Right now,
I do really like the...
The analog stick?
The analog stick, there's like a ridge around it that I like the feel of it.
Yeah, the Xbox has become my Cuphead box.
Oh my, we're going to talk about Cuphead later on Gamescast.
Yeah, yeah.
How are you feeling about it?
I like it a lot. I'm definitely snowballing into getting good at it. It's, it's a game that out of the box, it's going to take some time, but just breathing and learning the game and how they want you to play it,
yeah,
you can definitely kick ass with it.
How far are you?
I'm not very far. I got past, I'm in world two, middle of world two. Yeah, world I'm two. Taking my time with it
because
I
know great,
that, I know that it's game. A pretty special but difficult game. So
yes, absolutely. Now it is time for Squad Up. Greetings, Kinda Funny Crew. I've been playing League of Legends for over 6 years now, and I always seem to do awful in the ranks mode. I'm currently sitting in Silver 1, incredibly average, and have aspirations to reach gold before the season ends in a few weeks. Please help a poor boy make his dreams come true. My ID is X, Sick X, Play X on the North America server. Love watching everything you do. Keep up the great work. Love, Osama. P.S. Please don't make fun of me for my name for being cringy. I started using it when I was a wee lad in middle school, and I can't convince myself to change it. Thanks, guys.
Yo, that's okay. That's everyone on the internet. It's fine. You have nothing to worry about.
So that's our boy Osama. Help him out. His ID is X, Sick X, Play X. He needs some League of Legends help. So thank you for that. I'm now going to go to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong to see all the things that we got wrong today.
I'm sorry in advance for everything I said that was wrong.
Let's see.
If I did.
Here we go. Ignacio Rojas says, they brought back the online multiplayer for Battlefront on PC. It's crossplay between Steam and GOG.
So, oh, okay. So cool. They did bring it back. Cool. Yeah.
Awesome. Very cool. And that's it. We didn't get anything else wrong.
Awesome.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Love that. Well, Gerard, thank you so much for joining us here on Kinda Funny Games Daily.
Thank you for having me. Hopefully I didn't bore too many of your people at home.
No, I'm sure they fucking love you. Check him out on youtube.com/
That One Video Gamer.
That One Video Gamer.
Or, his or work, just search The Completionist.
The Completionist. That's the show. It's fantastic. Really, like, give it a shot.
Stop it.
No, honestly, man. It's some really, really, really good content. Looking back at any type of game, old games, new games, and like,
thanks,
you
man.
You have a real analytical look at stuff, and I appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You can find him later on Kinda Funny Games Cast with me. Andy Cortez will be making some appearances too. Until then, I love you. Thank you for everything. And now we shake.